the favorites to make the Stanley Cup final this year. These Canadians, Ronald Torrey, got Serge Savard. He hired Jacques Demers. And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadians win the Stanley Cup.
Barkov, slap pass, Plekanec shoots, scores!
Le tir est le Daniel Brière!
To the boards, one last chance. P.K. Subban passes off, and he scores!
Tipped in front by guess who? Thomas Fennec has the hat trick.
It would a Purcell. Oh, get on it, Price! Should have killed a Purcell.
Welcome to the 2-4, another playoff edition. Zach Vanoss, Sean O'Neill, glad to have you along once again. We'll look to bring this in under the regular time. We'll shoot for about an hour or so, as we said last week. We'll be firing off with greater frequency as long as the Montreal Canadiens are still playing in this 2014 playoffs. So we'll do our best to keep it to about an hour or so today. Good luck to us, I say.
Yeah, well, I gotta say, I was pretty impressed with our ability to kind of rein it in last episode.
We can be quite magnificent sometimes.
Once in a while, we're in playoff form.
That's exactly.
We're clutch. That's what we are.
We're pretty clutch. There's a lot of character. Exactly. We're the Danny Breer of podcasters.
About the same height.
Exactly. Since we last cast, the Montreal Canadiens have taken a 3-0 lead in their best of seven against Tampa Bay. 4-1 win game two, 3-2 win in game three. We're not telling you anything you don't know, though. Feeling pretty good. Well, how could we feel bad?
Yeah, once the Habs kind of stole that first game, I mean, obviously you're not thinking sweep after the first game, but we kind of talked about this last episode. Once, you know, Carey kind of found his rhythm a bit in the third and in overtime, and you started to wonder if maybe Tampa kind of had their chance to crack Carey, and they got to him a little bit too late. And once he got into a rhythm, you know, this is a team that's missing their most valuable player. And, you know, it hasn't, you know, they easily could have won that first game. They kind of probably could have won game three as well. But I felt pretty good after that first game. And obviously, two games later, I'm feeling pretty great. But, Even midway through the second, the possibility of a sweep, and we're not there yet, but the possibility of a sweep sort of started to enter my mind.
This is a completely different team than we saw through 82 games of the regular season. Playing completely different hockey. So before we get into the 12-pack, I got just a question to float out you. Is there any chance that this was all part of the plan for Terrien and Bergevin?
No. I don't see why your plan would be to go through extended periods of struggling before turning it on come postseason. I don't think that truly elite teams do that.
No, I don't necessarily think so either, but it just...
I do think there are differences between regular season hockey and playoff hockey.
Yes.
That being said, Montreal never really struck me as a team that was built for the playoffs in the traditional sense.
Well, they're playing a completely different kind of hockey, though.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, it's completely different. So what, they just decided, Terrien only realized in game one of the playoffs how they need to play? I'm confused, I guess is what I'm saying. Where does suddenly the upward motion come from these guys?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's three games against a team that doesn't have their MVP on the ice.
That's true.
But, you know, this is a team that was playing well going into the break. To a certain extent, they've kind of gotten better all season long as the season's progressed. Mm-hmm. They're a different team with Vanagon in the lineup. Even with Galchenyuk out, they're a team that's hitting their stride. I don't know what changed. I don't know if it's because they decided to step it up. I think Terrien has been better, and I think that's a big part of it. But I think the Vanek trade really just shifted the whole dynamics of this team, and there's a depth there, and there's a level of there's the dynamicness there that wasn't there before.
Question number two before we get into the official questions. Is it just me, or does John Cooper look like Michael Keaton? Like current Michael Keaton, not Batman Michael Keaton. This is what I find.
I haven't noticed that.
Might be a hairline thing. I'm just throwing that out there, people. Just asking. You know, we don't need to get in a fight over it.
I'm Googling him right now because I've seen what he's looked like the past week, but I'm not sure if I see it.
Just throwing it out there.
No, I appreciate that.
All right. Let me know once you agree with me. Question one to get us going. Who's Montreal's best skater been so far?
You can make an argument for Bork, obviously. You can make an argument for Eller. Mm-hmm. Start to finish, the guy who's impressed me the most has been Plekanec, though.
Plex has skated well.
Who's been in just vintage Plekanec form. Mm-hmm. Great defensively, driving towards the net, creating opportunities, good playmaker. He's scored a couple times, I don't criticize him for this. He's not a guy who generally shows a lot of emotion. That's just obviously his personality. We've seen more emotion out of him after he scored that goal than I think I've ever seen out of him.
Historically, he's been a bit of a lackluster playoff performer. He's always been a better regular season player than he was in the playoffs. A lot of that, I imagine, comes from the fact that he was tasked with neutralizing whoever they were throwing at them. But he's always looked like he's broken down a little bit, exhausted by the time the playoffs get here. Perhaps now he's hit a point in his career where he's veteran enough to realize what he needs to still have in order to be successful in these playoffs. Because for the first time, I think that I can remember, Plex has had a really good, really good playoff so far. To the point that, I think he's been one of their better skaters. For me, the best skater so far has been PK Subban, though. This is a guy who really elevated his game, I think, through three, with game one being the exception. But if you tally it all up at this point, I think Subban's been the most impressive skater, particularly what he did in game three. But game two, he came on. He's looked in these last two games a lot more like the guy who won the Norris Trophy than the guy that we had through 82 this regular season.
Yeah, for a guy who struggled down the stretch by his standards, he's been fantastic. I mean, that assist.
But jeez.
I don't know. We're going to be watching that for a long time to come. That's going in the time vault.
I mean, that inspired TSN's top 10, the top 10 playoff passes. It was so good. That was a beauty pass.
And you watch it, and it's right. Like, we all remember that. I think number one on that list was the Crosby.
Yeah, it was the Crosby effort.
Behind the net against Ottawa.
Yeah.
You know, which is a play we all remember. Everyone, not just Habs fans, like everyone's going to remember where they were when they saw that PK play. That's like a sort of an instant classic seminal playoff moment. That was a gorgeous play. The list of defensemen in the league who can do that is him, maybe Drew Doughty, probably Erik Karlsson, and that's about it.
It's made all the better by, is it Okposo, who looks like who's just completely blown a tire and is literally upside down behind the net when you freeze frame it there?
That visual is.
It just looks like he blew. I mean, he did. He completely just blew past everyone and then had them in a mad scramble. They had no idea what was going on. And it's not like the pass was an easy one to make after that. He still had to thread it perfectly through to Gallagher. Gallagher was there at the right time. Beauty goal. One of my favorites of the season so far, I think.
Absolutely fantastic goal, by the way. This will be irrelevant by the time you listen to it, but 1-0 Columbus about 2 minutes into game three.
Oh, God. People really love the live updates on a podcast.
That's what I'm here for.
Thank you for that. 1-0 Columbus, though.
Yeah.
Interesting. Question two. What is the biggest factor in Montreal being ahead 3-0 in this series?
I hate to sound like Debbie Downer, but I do think it's the fact that Ben Bishop hasn't played a minute yet.
I agree.
I mean, Montreal could very well be up 2-1. After three games, if Bishop's in nets, I doubt it's a sweep.
Yeah.
Or a potential sweep. You know, I doubt they're up 3-0. Let's say they could be down. They could be up 2-1. They could be down 2-1. It could even be 3-0 in the opposite direction, though I doubt that the way they're playing. But Lindback hasn't been horrible.
No, he was actually really good at game
three. Okay, he's been serviceable. But, I mean, you know, Bishop is arguably the Vezina front runner. And, you know, whether you think he deserves that or not, this looks like a different team with him not back there making 32 saves a night.
I would argue he's not the Vezina front runner, but I think he's second. I think Rask is going to get this thing. But needless, I mean, that goes, doesn't matter. He's a great goalie. He's been central to their team. I think they even play a little differently when he's not there. I think they were trying to protect Lindback a little bit, which really hurt the team overall. They didn't have the confidence that Bishop would have given them. Montreal was able to sustain its confidence thanks to a lot going in, thanks to the fact that Lindback has been fine. Lindback was good in Game 3. I think he gave him a chance, actually, there when it was nothing but Montreal in that first period. He kept them alive. He gave him a shot. It didn't work out there. Down 3-0. But Bishop, I'm not saying Bishop would be the difference maker in Tampa Bay beating Montreal instead of the whooping that's happening right now. But I think the series would, obviously, the series would be a lot closer without Bishop. That's the big, big thing that we could all point to right now. And it makes complete sense.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think so. And, you know, Hedman's great, but beyond that, I think we're starting to realize there's not a whole lot of depth on that Tampa blue line.
No, I mean, once Lindback
hasn't been
up,
great, but they've hung him out to dry a little bit.
Montreal's been getting a lot of breaks through that defense. That's been a soft, soft defense. I think the softest defense I've seen out of any of the games I've watched the entire playoffs has been Tampa Bay so far.
2-0 CBJ about 2.5 minutes in.
How about that?
Jeez.
How about that?
I didn't think they were going to win a game.
I thought they'd win a couple. Maybe two. I mean, that could, you know, it's this one's far from over, but I thought they had a shot.
I really didn't. But,
Marc-Andre Fleury, my friend.
Yeah. He hasn't even been bad.
No, he hasn't been bad yet. Yet. Allow me to underline the yet. I mean, by the time this podcast is recorded, that yet may be canceled, since it's 2-0 Columbus right now.
Yeah. They haven't done the, from what I've gathered, they haven't done the close-up of Volkman on the bench, but I imagine that's happening within the next 30 seconds.
They're getting ready for it. Move us into the third.
Which brings us, we'll move away from the live updates to number three. Which NHLer has impressed you the most through the first half of the first round?
Cole Harbour's own Nathan MacKinnon, right?
Seven points
in two games. I mean, it's something living in the shadow of Sidney Crosby, the way this kid obviously had to. And he's coming to this season, and there was a little bit of extra spotlight on him simply because there was some, many out there who agreed that perhaps Seth Jones should have been the first overall pick. And so when Colorado went and took MacKinnon, a few people shake their heads. I didn't. I thought that was the right move. I think you agreed with me as well at that point. But, you know, there's been some focus. There's been some pressure on him. Who's better than 7 points in two games from an 18-year-old? I mean, if that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what does. That's amazing. It's more than anybody expected, too.
Yeah, and then this isn't a knock on Seth Jones, because I think he's going to be great as well, but we do this all the time with these type of players. It happened to Tavares, it happened to Spezza. Like, these young guys just get picked apart from the age of 15 onwards, so that, you know, at one point they're the next Gretzky, and then by the time they hit their draft year, there's all of a sudden this up-and-comer who's ready to grab the throne. But, I mean, we've been talking about this guy for a long, long time now.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of those special players that we all knew, that everyone knew the name of since he was 15 years old, 14 years old. And like I said, I think Jones is going to be great. I think Drew and Barkov are going to be really good too. But like, I think Colorado got a really special player, a generational once every 10 years type player.
He's off to a good start. It's been amazing.
He has been fantastic. He's been the breakout. He's been the breakout star of the playoffs. Like you know, he had that play, was it Saturday afternoon or whatever? I think I texted you and a couple other people, and I said over under 3 years before he wins a Hart Trophy. Because right now, that's what he looks like. He looks like, you know, he's the heir apparent.
And I took the under.
I think I am, too.
I mean, you could see it coming next year or the year after that, really.
Yeah,
you really mean, could. If he, 18 to 20, if he's a smart kid, I mean, on the one hand, you can say he's still really young, so don't expect it there. But also the amount of hockey that you can learn in that age and how fast. We see it all the time, the development difference in guys from 18 to 20 years old. And I mean, yeah, he already seems to be at a real high level, but there's no reason to believe that won't continue to increase. He could win in the next 2 years. I really think he could win it as a 20-year-old.
Yeah, especially if that team, you know, that team's having a great season, and maybe it's a bit smoke and mirrors, but if that's one of the better teams in the NHL in the next couple of years and they have a 110-point season and, you know, he's in the top five in the league in scoring, I could see that happening.
Patrick Roy just keeps pushing the right buttons and pulling the right levers for that team.
Yep.
What a... he's a maestro, it seems, of coaching right now. Maybe he's just on a lucky run, but he seems to be doing all the right things to get those wins.
And, you know, it's not like he hasn't had success at the lower levels.
That's very true.
Yeah, I think it's getting to the point where I'm willing to admit that I was pretty damn wrong about him.
I said that to you earlier this week. I believe it was time for me to come around and say, you know what, completely think I was wrong about Juan. Now, it would have been, obviously, the circus is the word everyone loves to throw around when they talk about Juan and Montreal, and it would have been. But I don't know if it would have been enough of a distraction to take away from how good of a coach he seems to be.
Yeah, that used to be my out clause. That was my caveat that, yeah, he's doing great in Colorado, but I don't know if he could have dealt with the pressure in Montreal. There might be a kernel of truth to that, but at this point, I'm just starting to think he's a pretty good coach.
He's a good coach. Here's a let's not get carried away. I just like to throw things out there. Stanley Cup this year, Colorado, Montreal. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be unbelievable.
I mean, we're so far from that, folks. I just throw it out there. Be crazy. We'd go nuts.
That would be, yeah, that would be one of the, you know, there's a couple. I mean, Roy makes a couple of series interesting, whether it's, I mean, obviously Montreal is the big one. But, you know, a Colorado-Detroit Stanley Cup final with Roy behind the bench, that'd be pretty fun.
Colorado-Boston just Colorado, because Roy versus the Bruins. Bowl. Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
If they get to the finals, which I don't think they will, but, you know, if they do make a weird run, despite having no defense, there's a couple pretty enticing matchups there.
Patrick Roy, you are always entertaining, if nothing else. Already dreaming about Roy. I mean, he's the only coach who we really think about matchups, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Even guys who used to come, I mean, I guess we'd think about Alain Vigneault if somehow, you know, the Rangers and Canucks would have got back there. Obviously, big storyline there. But really, Roy is on a team with the, you know, McKinnon's maybe started to steal the light a little bit, but Roy is still the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, he's the face of that franchise right now.
Yep. Well, I'm starting to think of a Colorado-Detroit. That would be fun. That
would be fun. Also be a big surprise, which takes us to question four. What is the biggest surprise so far through two, three games?
I really didn't think St. Louis had a chance against Chicago.
That's what I got.
And maybe that's unfair, seeing that, you know, St. Louis looked like the President's Trophy winner until about a month left in the season. But I thought that was going to go five, maybe six. And, I mean, I think Chicago still has a chance. They're going back to the United Center tonight. But the fact that they're down 2-0 after two, I did not see that coming. You know, the way St. Louis struggled down the stretch there, and I just, you know, I thought Chicago was getting healthy at the right time. I thought that was, in a way, it was an enticing series, but I thought it was a bit of a mismatch. And St. Louis is, despite all the injuries, they're sort of back to who they were.
And the Hawks are losing their cool a little bit.
Yeah, they did that last year, too, for a stretch. They, you know, they regained their sea legs, but they went through a stretch last year where they were getting pretty frustrated in that Detroit series, and they needed to kind of take a deep breath and calm down, and we'll see if they can do that in this series. But yeah, they're, for a team that's, you know, generally very poised, they've had a couple breakdowns.
But they have. That has been the biggest surprise for me, for sure. I mean, don't count them out yet, though. The Hawks are not done. But for St. Louis to go up 2-0, I mean, I will. I did say I was excited about this series, and I was not wrong about that. These have been two great games so far from these two teams, and it could easily be Chicago 2-0 right now.
Yeah, I mean, at least those games have been close. Maybe the biggest surprise is LA letting in 13 goals in two games.
There's a meltdown. Who would you start quick again?
Yeah.
I would too, but you've got they've got the horses in, back behind them. In Newton, that kid's name, Jones, something.
Lewis?
I don't think it's Lewis. You know, backup goalie in L.A.
I think it is Jones, you're right.
It's Jones, Cam Jones? Sure.
Sure, why not?
That's his name now. Whoever it is that they have him backup in L.A., he played pretty well in the regular season. But
he played very well. He had a nice stretch there.
I guess you got to go with Quick again.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people out there who think that Quick, you know, kind of got hot for 2 months, but is a relatively mediocre goalie besides that.
I disagree with that. I think
with that, too. There's starting to be some... Martin Jones, by the way. Might be a kernel of truth to it, but I think Quick's a pretty big-time goalie, and he's had a rough two-game stretch, but I don't think you can justify benching Jonathan Quick in the playoffs. If he lays another, if he lets in five tomorrow, then maybe.
But you're also screwed at that point.
Yeah, there's that.
Just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic at that point. Question five. Will we see Douglas Murray again?
Knowing our coaching staff, probably.
I think we'll see him if we see Boston. I don't think we see him against Tampa Bay.
Yep, that could be.
But I think the Boston size and whatnot may intimidate them to the point of thinking they need Murray in that lineup.
Yeah, that's a good call. I could easily see that happening.
If Detroit gets past Boston and Montreal gets past Tampa Bay, so then it's Montreal and Detroit, then I wouldn't. Then maybe wouldn't see Murray. But I have a feeling that if it's Boston, then Murray's going to be in the lineup. Maybe that's the difference. I mean, it's been no Douglas Murray in the lineup, and they've played
removing the worst player in the NHL from your lineup tends to help.
It's got to have an effect. It's certainly some positive Corsi. I don't think it's the whole thing, but it helps.
The whole thing either, but I think that makes a difference when you don't have that guy playing 16 minutes a night.
He's a minus. He's a negative.
He is. He really is. I hate to keep harping on the guy, but he, at this point in his career, at least he is.
Well, I think it's fair, though, to say that if they get him out there, puts the Canadians in a lot worse position, and it's much harder for them to generate the kind of chances they've been generating through the first three games of this series. I mean, they've been amazing. Just the best hockey, the best three games I think I've seen them play this season, consecutively.
That's probably fair. Off the top of my head, that sounds about right.
They had some great efforts. Chicago comes to mind the night they won against the Blackhawks at the Bell Center. There were a few games in there, played good hockey, but three in a row in which they were that dominant, even with the you know, there's some tense moments, and obviously game one got to overtime, but I still think that was dominant hockey from the Habs for the most part. I don't think I've seen that at any other point in the season. Not in a row like that. They've put together three great efforts.
They're looking good.
They're looking good. Very good. There's one thing to go back a little bit to what I was just saying. That game against Chicago, they did play for the most part outside of one game against Pittsburgh and one game against Boston. To my recollection, they played the best teams really well throughout the season. They did always seem up for that game. And I got to think that's part of what we were seeing in those games is a little bit, as I ask off the top, was it all part of the plan? I don't know if it's all part of the plan, but this was a team that knew how to play good hockey when it came time to play good hockey, it seemed.
Yeah, it's a team with a high upside. I mean, this is a talented team. Mm-hmm. And there's been bad stretches. Overall, their numbers aren't very good. I think that's partially due to coaching. I don't think this is a team that suffers from a lack of character or a lack of leadership or whatever it is, but this is a team that's capable of raising its game to pretty high levels when they're poked.
They're just getting it from everyone right now. So if Galchenyuk comes back in the next round, and say Moen is good to go in the next round, who the hell comes out of this lineup?
Yeah, that's a good question. I almost wonder if Moen sits, even if he's healthy, but that doesn't seem to be the team's MO. They seem to be, you know, pretty enamored with Travis Moen when he's healthy. And like, he's been okay.
Bornival comes out of the lineup for just because of his age. He's the rookie, and Galchenyuk goes in over him. But I don't know how you get Moen in that lineup. Prust comes out?
Yep.
Prust has been, I would say, the weakest forward for Montreal so far.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They like having Prust in that lineup for leadership point. Moen, who hasn't skated in, what, 3-4 weeks, or Prust as he is right now, that's a tough call. I don't know.
Neither do. They do. And for semi-similar players, I think Prust is better at what he does. This doesn't seem like a very Michel Therrien move, but there's always the chance to go 13 forwards.
Yeah, I suppose. Gee, I would almost support that. Means no Bouillon?
Yeah.
Although Bouillon's played well. I mean, everyone's played well.
He has been well. He has been playing well, yeah.
He has been well.
He has been well. Thanks for asking.
Move us ahead.
We are up to number...
six.
We are up to number six. Do you expect any other lower-seeded teams to win a series?
I got the Flyers taking the Rangers, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think that might be the one lower seed. That's the only one. I still think the Blackhawks can come back, but They are down 2-0, and St. Louis looks like they maybe know what they're doing right now. If I'm taking one of the lower seeds besides Montreal, I'll take Philadelphia.
Yeah, I don't feel great about this, but I'm going to stick with Chicago.
It's not a bad one.
I mean, I had them winning the cup a week ago, and they haven't lost at home yet, which is important to remember. So if they can go, you know, back home, like I said, that place is going to be insane.
Yeah, it is.
I could easily see them just winning three in a row at home, and, you know, grabbing control of the series again. So I'll stick with Chicago.
What about Columbus?
I guess so. I still think Pittsburgh beats them.
Man, Pittsburgh, Philly, Montreal, Boston. It could happen.
I know.
Be great. Question seven.
Chicago, Colorado, and then...
Oh, shit, yeah.
And San Jose. Those are some pretty good second-round matchups.
Those are all great. I tell you, the new alignment seems to be working in terms of matchups.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's, you know, if they got lucky this year or if it sort of just worked out systemically, but I'm complaining less about the new system than I was a month ago, because it's pretty hard to complain with the playoffs so far this year.
How great was this past weekend? I mean, it seemed like I could just watch good hockey the entire time. One blowout that we've seen so far, and that was the San Jose 7-3 win.
Yeah, that's been the only true ass kicking.
I guess Tampa Bay was dominated wholeheartedly and wholeheartedly by Montreal game 2.
Yeah, Rangers kind of took care of business game 1 against Philly, but that's for the most part it's been close games.
Yeah, no, it's been entertaining hockey. Even, you know, even seeds that we weren't supposed to. Boston beat Detroit pretty convincingly, I thought, in game 2 actually.
Yeah, they did.
That was there was no doubt who was coming out of that building with two big points, as Rene Bork would say. A couple players have done that now.
What's that?
A couple players have, after the game, called the big two points for us tonight. You're like, it's not how it works anymore.
I mean, part of the reason the NHL did this alignment is they wanted to steal a little bit of March Madness, you know, magic with people filling out their brackets and gambling on it and stuff. And honestly, these Saturday, Sunday reminded me of the first those first 2 days of March Madness. Yep. It was just awesome game after awesome game and crazy finish after crazy finish. And you're just flipping between four or five games at the same time because you can't believe what's going on. They got a little bit of that this weekend.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. If you can probably get another weekend of that kind of action out of it. You got great matchups coming up, potentially. So far, so good. Like you say, I mean, it may just, you know, it might also be a quirk of this year. We just wound up with a nice kind of breakdown of teams. But I do like the bracketing idea. I like knowing immediately who you got next, the winner of the series. I like the way it's rolled out. Question 7.
I don't mind that aspect of it.
Question 7. How much does Montreal's power play problems concern you?
In a weird way, you could almost argue that this is sort of a good thing.
Yep.
Because in the past, the recipe for Montreal has always been your goalie will bail you out and you try and get enough calls to squeak out a 2-1 win. So the fact that they're doing this 5-on-5 instead of, you know, getting a couple power play goals per game from Surrey or Marc-Andre Bergeron or Mark Streit or Andre Markov or PK Subban, it's kind of a good thing. I mean, that being said, you want to see it start clicking at some point.
Well, you don't want it to...
But I'm in a weird way, I'm a little optimistic that this team's getting it done 5-on-5 instead of 5-on-4.
Well, if you have to, excuse me, if you have to choose 5-on-5 versus power play success, it's so nice to see that the team is winning with the 5-on-5 being the key to that, because when you're getting the power play, as the cliche that we're reminded of every year, is that stuff usually dries up come playoff time. Hasn't in these playoffs. I've seen a lot of penalties called so far in these playoffs, unless you're the Bruins, and you can get away with pretty much whatever the hell you want to do. But for everybody else, the rules still apply, it seems. And you're I'm marginally concerned because if they don't fix it soon, at some point it's going to come back to bite them in the ass, and it's going to cost them at least a game or two. And you don't really want to, you can't be just giving away games at this point in the year. And so I hope for that sake that it turns around. But as you start off saying, there's something almost, it's too much to go to say there's something comforting about it. But it's good to see that we've got all this scoring happening, mainly secondary scoring right now. And on top of that, it's all coming 5-on-5 instead of relying on the Habs to go the advantage. And I think that also maybe changes the style of play. I mean, if you're not needing the power play to create any offense, maybe you're not looking to get that call as much, and instead you have that confidence at 5-on-5 that obviously the Habs have had through three games against Tampa Bay to really, you know, pour it on. If your power play is as anemic as Montreal's has been, there's very little incentive to want to go on it. I think they've managed to draw a lot more offense, obviously, you know, by playing 5-on-5. And that's not to say I don't want to see the power play come back to work, but at least we know the 5-on-5 is going. And if you're going to rely on one, please give me 5-on-5. That's much more likely to be the recipe for success than just having a power play that can execute with precision.
And this is a relatively prolonged drought, but that being said, this just could be a cold stretch.
They don't move enough on the power play right now.
I would agree with that. That being said, Pacioretty, Vanek, Desharnais, Subban, Markov.
It's going to click.
You give those guys enough cracks in it, they're going to start putting the puck in the back of the net.
I do find, though, that maybe there's not enough movement because they're all such precision passers. I mean, they seem to have no trouble getting it to one another. It's just when it comes time to actually putting in the net, they seem to struggle. And I think they could, they're all such precise players. Maybe they need to get there needs to be more flow for me, I think, to really, I mean, look what Subban managed to do 5-on-5 against Tampa Bay, or 4-on-4 actually, because he had all that room to, you know, skate around and draw him off. You get everyone moving a little bit more. You get those Tampa Bay players or whoever we get in the next round's players out of position, rather than let everyone kind of settle in and just wait for you to find that perfect shot. I think almost there's too much confidence in the guys who are on the ice, and they keep looking for that perfect play on the power play instead of, you know, just trying to bury it.
I find that's often one of the biggest problems that a power play can run into is yeah, you've got the man advantage and you want to use that to your advantage, but just put the puck on net and things will happen more often than not. You don't have to search for that perfect pass and that perfect shot every single time.
Yeah. I think it'll click, though. I do think these guys will figure it out. I think at some point, you know, just keep going with the 5-on-5. At some point, that power play is going to fall in for you. It's, as you say, there's too much talent out there for it to not work. They'll figure it out. That's a lot of smart players, a lot of talented players. Question 8, it's a fill-in-the-blank. I know you love a good fill-in-the-blank. MacKinnon is the best rookie since?
Brendan Gallagher?
Not that good. He's not that good. Come on now.
Probably since Crosby, right?
It is since Sidney Crosby. Definitely since Sidney Crosby.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even think that's, you know, especially given the fact that Stamkos wasn't great as a rookie.
Nope.
It took until his second year to click. I can't even think of anyone who's really in the conversation.
No, I think MacKinnon's definitely the best since Crosby. And MacKinnon's looked not better than Crosby, but through his first two games of the playoffs, he had a better performance than even Sid did. He's still 18, and that makes me shake my head.
Like I said, this was a guy who was talked about as the next Crosby for a long, long time, and that talk dried up a little bit. But, you know, this guy is insanely talented. And, yeah, I mean, he's looked better as a rookie than Stamkos, than Tavares.
Taylor Hall.
He hasn't looked as good as Sid, but he's the best since Sid.
Sid did have something just extra, even more so than MacKinnon. I do have to agree with you there.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're talking about one of the guy who might go down as one of the 10 best players to ever play the game.
MacKinnon could be more in the conversation of, an Yzerman?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah, I think that's a very good comp.
Certainly a great, great player, but not at that quite, you know, we all know where the level cuts off, and it's got Lemieux in the conversation, Gretzky in the conversation, and Crosby, I think, is already in that conversation, and all the great greats, and then you got to all the very, very goods, and MacKinnon looks like he could be a very, very good.
I mean, Crosby didn't even win the Calder, but...
What a loser. What a loser. Nice try, Sid. If they fall to Columbus, there'll be some ramifications in Pittsburgh this time around.
Yeah, at this point, if they fall to Columbus, even if they get knocked out in the second round, I think that's a team that's going to have to do some soul searching because they're, I mean, we all knew this problem was coming, but after those top two lines, I mean, those they might have the worst bottom six in the league.
Yeah, it's been a lot of injuries. They have more
that's true.
Players for it. They're just a little bit of bad luck right now.
A little bit, but it's been about 5 straight years of bad luck.
That's fair. It has been. I mean, Montreal. I think we sound like we're getting ahead of ourselves. But the point is, Bergevin felt that he was going to need a lot of depth if he wanted this team to be successful. He obviously found that, and I think that's, you know, with all the secondary scoring, that's, I mean, I can't explain Renny Bork, but I don't think anyone can explain Renny Bork and what's happened there. But at the same time, the Canadians have four lines that they can confidently put out, and any one of those, I think, can hurt you at any given time, really. Pittsburgh doesn't feel like that. Yeah, they're scary when it's Malkin and Crosby in the front coming at you, but when it's the back six coming at you, not as terrifying. I think you can kind of relax a little bit there.
And I think, sure, by and large, Giroux's done a good job with that team, but you know, they haven't put the depth around that team the way San Jose has, the way Chicago has, the way LA has, certainly the way Boston has, the way Detroit has. I mean, the elite teams, it's like you said, there's been injuries, but amongst the elite teams, that's the thinnest by far.
Don't you feel like they lack a recce right now?
Maybe, yeah.
Like that's what he was for them when he was there, and as he did with Boston as well. I think they, I mean, who's their third line leader?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Sutter, but that kind of fell through.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And I think they're right trading away Staal, because we've seen that Staal's kind of an average player now. Yeah. He's in Carolina, but they probably could have gotten more.
Sure, he used to get a lot of credit, but people have his performance hasn't been so great these past few years, I don't think.
Nope, I wouldn't say so.
Move us ahead, sir.
Moving on to number 9. Is there a bigger piece of shit in the NHL than Milan Lucic?
No, there's not. No. Definitive no. What's with this guy? He's only done it 3 times in his career? Was that his quote? That was his defense of spearing people in the nuts? Can't stand Milan.
It's funny. Even the Bruins fans I know who I talked to, they couldn't really defend that
one. Well, how are you going to? I mean, people did. A few douchebags
people
out
did,
there
but
tried.
For the most part, even Bruins Nation was kind of admitting that was a bit off limits.
Here's
He's still not even the guy on the team I hate the most. So I guess I can't call him the biggest piece of shit in the league, but he's on the short list.
Who do you hate most, Marchand?
Yeah,
but he's a lot tinier.
Yeah. are we talking literally the biggest piece of shit?
Yeah, both ways.
Well, then you might have a point. Yeah, I don't know. Marchand gets under my skin even more than Lucic does.
I don't know. I don't like Lucic more than I don't like Marchand. I can't stand Milan Lucic. At least Boston struggled to come up with a way to defend him this time. You'll always find somebody because it's Boston. But, that was really something. $5,000 fine. That's pathetic. I did the math on that. That's about $30 to me.
Fair enough.
Given, if I was allowed to hit, I'd pay $30 to hit a few people in the nuts is what I'm saying.
So you're a piece of shit too.
Well, they don't let me though. And I accept that rule in life.
Oh, fair enough.
That's the line I draw in the sand. I think if I could pay $30 to hit someone in the nuts, I might do it, but we don't have that. So I've never crossed that line, so I'm not a piece of shit. Unlike Milan Lucic. Ugh, it's going to get ugly when we play them in round 2.
It really is.
It's going to get ugly.
I'm holding out hope that Detroit can pull off the upset, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, I feel like both teams are already looking over their shoulder at the other series and getting pissed off before things have even begun. Case in point, yeah. Question 9.
It's going to get nasty.
It's going to get nasty. Question 10. 3 games justifiable for Seabrook. Speaking of getting nasty.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Lucic, that was a dirty play. I mean, what Seabrook did was obviously categorically worse. 3 games, 3 playoff games is kind of the equivalent of, what, 7 or 8 regular season games, I guess. I don't really know what the sliding scale is, but
could be the rest of the regular season for him.
What's that?
Could be the rest of the season for him.
Could be, yeah. I mean, I think that's fair.
He may not play again. 3, that was dirty. That was dirty.
It really was.
3 didn't guarantee the rest of the series. I think you give him the rest of the series for that hit.
They've done that before.
Like, doesn't that just seem fair? Just the rest of the series, you don't get to play again in this one.
I wouldn't have had a problem with that.
I think that would have been fair.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had a problem with that. I'm okay with 3. Seabrook's a physical player, but he doesn't have a reputation.
No, that's true. There's no reputation.
Dirty. But that was a dirty, dirty play.
Well, it's a dirty series right now. Both teams.
Yeah, it is.
Chicago's been dirtier. Yeah, we knew it was going to get there. It got there fast, though. Although they've already played, what, almost three games in terms of actual hockey?
Yeah.
It's been such a fantastic series. I mean, we get really the triple overtimes and everything else. Unlikely heroes. Lots of unlikely heroes, although I think that's what overtime does every year in the cup run. There's always a lot of people that you didn't even know existed. Suddenly their names are winning big, big games because that's what happens when everything's magnified.
We've had one of our own.
No, come on. As I said last week on the podcast, Dale Weiss was everybody's pick. Everyone knew Dale Weiss was going to be the guy to go to. And they went nuts in the Netherlands, I imagine, where Dale Weiss is still a golden god.
He's got some wheels on him, man.
Really fast player. I mean, that fourth line with the... When it's Bornival and Weiss, they can fly. That's a really fast fourth line. That's not a clunking fourth line. Which is why I don't... There's nobody that I don't think I would take out of the lineup for Travis Moen. I just can't put him in there and not think it's a negative right now.
I would tend to agree. You know, if you buy the playoff experience argument, I mean, Travis Moen was unbelievable when the Ducks won the Cup.
And he's amazing on the penalty kill. He doesn't get enough credit for how good he is as a penalty killer.
Yeah, I think at some point you plug him back in. I mean, listen, at some point something's going to happen.
Exactly.
You don't have a choice. But for the time being, I'm almost with you.
Especially with the chemistry. I mean, do you really want to break it up? If they sweep Tampa Bay with these guys, do you really want to break up that chemistry for game one at Boston?
Probably not. I mean, Moen is the type of player you kind of want in the lineup for Boston. Yeah, but that being said, you know, I think Montreal gets into trouble when they overthink things against the Bruins and feel that they have to match them pound for pound because you're just not going to do that.
No, you got to beat them the other way, which works.
Yeah, it does. I think Moen's probably earned his stripes to the point where he's going to get back into the lineup, and I won't have a big problem with it because he does bring stuff to the table. But it's like you said, it's a hard. It's the team is playing so well right now. It's hard to move anyone out.
Not a bad problem to have. Galchenyuk obviously comes back in, and Bornival has to come out. That's just how it be. Question 11, Hawks, Kings, Stars, Wild, they're all down 2-0 in their series. Probably not the case by the time you hear this. But in the interest of trying to guess, who do you have most likely to bounce back? I mean, you've talked about the Hawks. I guess that's your pick. Who outside of that might be able to come back still?
I guess the Kings have the talent to do it, right? And again, both losses have been on the road. That being said, Chicago's two losses were overtime losses.
Yep.
Kings are going up 13 goals in two games against a San Jose team that looks like they're just poised on a collision course for the Cup final right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Hawks are the only one who are going to do it.
Yeah, the Wild aren't climbing back. Stars aren't climbing back, nor are the Kings. I think the Hawks might. I would even almost bet on it.
Fair enough.
But the other three aren't coming back.
I thought the Stars were going to give the Ducks a run. I thought they were going to win, but they kind of look kind of just happy to be there right now.
Can you blame them? It's been a while.
Yeah, it has, and the future is bright. And I probably wasn't giving Anaheim as much credit as I should have, but I thought that'd be more of a series than it has been.
Hasn't been much so far. I think that's the most boring series of them all so far.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Not so interested in that one thus far. All right, wrap us up here.
That brings us to number 12. Does Montreal complete the sweep?
I think so.
I do too.
I said before game three, I was talking to some folks, I said, if Tampa Bay is going to win one, I think it needs to be game three. Then they could have maybe put their foot back in the series. But if they're going to get the win that could have led to other wins, it had to come in game three. I think this thing is shut down now. Tampa Bay had their shot. They really got deflated by the goal that was called back, which we'll talk about. We haven't really discussed that too much. And then, you know, for Montreal to have stepped on him there, stomping him out at the end as they made their last push, I think that was the end of Tampa Bay at that point. I think you can start shining the brooms.
I think so, too. Especially after, you know, if it was in Tampa and they had a shitty anthem beforehand and, you know, a couple weird things happening maybe, but that crowd in Montreal is going to be awfully pumped. And maybe we overstate the effects of that somewhat, but
I don't think so. I think the first 20 minutes
this looks
of
like
game
a Montreal
three
team that's ready to close the deal at home.
Yep. And you have to. Don't let them linger. Because even if it's only one game, now there could be the dead cat bounce. That always happens. I mean, it's easy for Montreal. You can also understand why they might take their foot off the gas a little and forget that, uh-oh, you can't even do that even against a team that seems destroyed. On the other hand, they're up 3-0. I think Tampa Bay is fairly deflated. I think they'll come out there and put the sword to the throat at this point. And you really, that's, you have to do it, because even if they force you to play one more game, that's another chance, another risk of more injuries. You never want to even open that door a little bit if you can shut it. I really want to see them come out in game four, close it, give themselves a chance to rest everybody up, give yourself a chance to ensure there's no injuries in a game five just because you couldn't close the door in game four. Rest up for what's, I'm betting, is going to be Boston, because you're going to need it. I don't worry about the rust factor. Let's close this thing out in four games. I think that's important to the Canadiens, so just in terms of their health and how far they might be able to go beyond that. It's really important to close that out in game four.
Montreal right now looks like a team that's hellbent on winning in four.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They do not want Tampa Bay to get in. And I think not only they don't want Tampa Bay, they're confident.
Tampa's not coming back, but like you said, no need to stretch it to five or six.
Well, just it benefits you not. I mean, play the least amount of games that you can early in these playoffs, because it's going to take everything and everybody, everything they possibly have. If you plan on making anything of a significant run, you need to finish Tampa Bay while you can. They're not coming back. I'm not concerned about that. I just think there's no need to play extra minutes of hockey if we can avoid it. If all it takes is one more concentrated effort and drill it back. Lindback, I mean, he hasn't proven he can win a game yet in these playoffs. You got to finish him right now.
Yeah, and I think they will.
I think they will as well. Our first sweep since 1993. Don't know what followed that up. Have no idea how the 93 season finished. I think they'll complete it. Let's talk about the callback, though. Been debated a lot in the 24 hours, or a little less than 24 hours since. What's your thinking on it? Should that have been a goal?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
No question. I know by the extremely strict interpretation of the letter of the law, maybe not, but that's an asinine rule if that's the case. And there's always an element of common sense that comes into these things, and it was sorely lacking in that case. I know there are Habs fans out there that were trying to defend it, but my God, that was a bad call.
I mean, if it went against us, can you imagine?
I know.
Who's defend? That's a terrible call. It's a terrible call. And yes, it is. There's room within the rules of the game for the referee to find a place to legitimize that call. But that's just finding a way to legitimize what you know was a bad call, because you don't make that call generally. That's on the first bump, sure, you had a case of, and I think that's kind of what he saw was the first bump, but a lot of time had gone on from there. A lot of movement had taken place. That puck crossed the line very cleanly. And Price really, had he seen it, would have had a real shot at it. I don't think anybody stopped him. Yes, the blue paint's technically his, but nobody was in his way. I mean, we all remember back when it was any part of the player in the blue paint and that goal got called back and how awful that was. Let's not get to a place where that is again. That should have been a fine goal and may have altered the series. I don't think so. I think Montreal still look like the better team, and I think they still could have won. We could still be up 3-0 even if that goal counts. But it is a backbreaker at the same time, and you understand why Tampa Bay would be so upset. It should have been allowed. That should have been a good goal.
Yeah, I mean, this has been the reverse of the Ottawa series. The Ottawa series, they were by far the better team, but it seemed like there was about 15 mini breaks that didn't go our way that culminated in a 4-1 series loss. You know, just out shooting them and losing in overtime, the kicked goal that didn't stand. Like, you know, I'm not saying this is karma or whatever, but this is sort of the reverse of the kick goal, where we got a little robbed last year, and this year we got away with one, because I don't see how that could have been a goal.
I also say, keep this in mind for later rounds. If it comes back at us, these are the breaks that happen, and it worked to our advantage in game three. That should have been a goal. I think, you know, most logical sports fans, we don't need to take it apart. That's a goal. It's obvious that that's a goal. But, you know, it could easily come back in the next series against Boston or Detroit. Something that, once again, you know, will enrage us. Keep in mind that these things happen once in a while. And as you say, it happened last year against Ottawa. And it's not like, I'm not saying there's a great score sheet in the sky and all these things always balance out. Maybe that doesn't happen in Montreal in the playoffs this year. But once in a while it'll happen. And it worked to our advantage in Game 3, obviously. I will take it.
Yeah.
When it comes our way, I will take it. Ahead, we've got Tuesday night.
That's it.
No more podcasts. We do one round. And then hopefully not Thursday. Hopefully not Saturday. We'll podcast. Yeah, if they finish up the series, we'll have to do this again at some point in there. Then it'll be waiting a little while.
Yeah, so the schedule is relatively TBD, I guess. But I think this one's only going four. Hopefully Detroit can still make things interesting against Boston, but that could only go four. That could only go five as well, maybe.
Could.
In any case, you got to wait until the first round wraps up. So obviously there's a couple series that are going seven.
I don't know what I'll do without the Habs if we have to wait like 5-6 days. Grow very impatient. Haven't thought about that struggle yet. Like the long struggle of a work day before a playoff game. My God, those days drag.
Yeah, they sure do. Tomorrow's going to be a long one.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have a prognostication, sir?
Beyond the sweep?
Beyond the sweep.
Inevitable sweep?
Yeah, that's what I had as well.
Yeah. Let's go with that. It's actually a relatively bold prediction. If you told me a week ago we were going to sweep Tampa in the first round, I would have.
Oh yeah, no.
Not sure I would have believed you.
I agree. It would have been bold a week ago.
Not so bold now.
No, it's one game left. We both kind of agreed.
It's going to be a sweep, and here I'll 4-2 final score.
Ooh, final score. I like it.
David Desharnais scores the winner.
Ooh, all right. Really picked it up there, bud. Well done. I got Patches. He's not going to score in this series. And his stuff's going to wake up in the Bruins series. He's gone since goal 39. We're looking at a pretty lengthy stretch from Patches, which in a weird way, when you're up 3-0, you almost want it to go one game longer. As long as the Canadians can win and have that, because you know he's going to come out of that funk. It's not just going to stick around. And it doesn't usually last much longer than what we've seen so far.
Yeah, it's kind of like the power play thing. You know, obviously it's a finite number of games in the playoffs, so you want things to start clicking sooner rather than later.
Yes.
But you know it's going to happen, so you kind of take a little bit of comfort in the fact that you're winning convincingly, even without your best goal scorer not putting the puck in the back of the net, and even without your power play clicking.
Well, look, I mean, we're getting the secondary scoring right now. If guys like Rene Bork and Lars Eller are going to carry some of the scoring load, then this is when you can afford for Patches to go cold for a little while. And I'm, you know, just anticipating that it wakes up again. And he does seem, I mean, he likes to hurt a lot of teams. That's what happens when you get on your way to 39 goals. But he's always been pretty good against the Bruins. I'm predicting that's
has another stuff one of our wingers.
Well, Thomas Vanek?
Yeah.
He's all right.
Who's been relatively quiet as well.
He has been relatively quiet.
He looked great in the first game. Hasn't really done much the last two games. But I know every Boston fan is a little terrified of the prospect of playing Vanek.
Boston fans are a little terrified of the prospect of playing the Montreal Canadiens around, too.
I think so.
They would much rather see Tampa Bay come out of this one, which isn't going to happen now. But you know, prior to the series, they would have much rather seen Tampa Bay come out.
Yeah, just as we'd kind of much rather see Detroit. Even though we've played better. I mean, we've played better against Boston this year than we have against Detroit.
Who do you think we have a better shot at? Detroit or Boston? Who do they have a better shot at?
Detroit.
Logically, I agree, but I think they got a better chance of beating Boston if we throw logic out the window, which is exactly how you want to make predictions. I just think they're in Boston's head, and I think Detroit would beat them. I think Babcock would beat Terrier.
Yeah, but I mean, that being said, Boston's really been the best team in the NHL since day one, whereas Detroit, you know, only kind of snuck into the playoffs in the last 10 days.
I just think Montreal's more likely to beat Boston.
Yeah,
Told you I threw logic out. God. Such a douche. Segue.
Oh.
Who's your douche of the week?
I don't know. We're up 3-0. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, you can jump into another series like I did with the biggest piece of shit in the NHL.
Yeah, there's that. PJ Stock's been his usual PJ Stockish self.
How about all the CBC? Maybe I feel like if I won't even pick the Toronto Maple Leafs. I feel like if the Edmonton Oilers were the only Canadian team in the NHL and were up 3-0 and playing really convincing hockey so far, CBC would be absolutely in love with it. Not so much enamored with the Canadians yet. It'll come in the second round. It has to come in the second round. Even if obviously Don Cherry is not going to be onside.
I mean, yeah, strictly from a ratings point of view, if you're CBC, you'd think you'd be pushing this Canada's team narrative pretty hard.
That seems to be coming around a little bit.
It never really happens in the first round.
No. I didn't think it would happen at all, though, with the Canadians. I thought we were too loath for it to happen.
I think it will out west, and it won't in Ontario, which is fine, because if Toronto or Ottawa were the only team, I wouldn't be cheering for them either.
Casual fans will jump on. I've said this before. The casual hockey fan who only pays attention to the hockey once the playoffs roll around and can't even name the players on what they call their favorite team generally, they'll have no trouble bandwagoning. There's plenty of room. We got room. You guys can all come on. We'll ride this
as far. Yeah, up on board. I'm fine with it, to be honest.
You know, we'll all be included. That way, you can't shit talk us when things turn someday.
But yeah, no douche. I'm too happy.
I can agree.
And it's you can't douche on Easter Monday.
Is that true?
Well, it's frowned upon.
I didn't know. I'm glad you told me that, actually. So it's not. Never mind. Milan Lucic is. I call him a piece of shit, but I did not call. I didn't hand out a douche because I didn't realize this this Easter thing. Highlight of the week.
Maybe the highlight of the year. I mean, literally speaking, that PK was everything. That was the PK Subban experience condensed into 8 seconds.
We'd kind of been waiting for him to do that since he arrived in the NHL.
Yeah.
That was the moment we kept being like, Subban will do that at some point. And he did it. And it was great. Of course, that's the highlight of the week. Though, honorable mention has to go to the Bergy dance. It's a nice little celebration.
Yeah, it was a nice little moment from a guy who's usually pretty pretty buttoned down.
Very buttoned down. He's excited. I'm telling you, it was all part of the plan. Playoffs. And that's it. We did it. 1 hour.
1 hour.
We're going to come
How
in
about that,
just
folks?
Like we promised.
We're the
people.
Rene Bork of podcasting.
Explain that to me before we go. How'd it happen? What's going on?
I just had to up our game. It's that time of year.
No, I'm saying Rene Bork, not you and I.
The boys did a good job. It's win or go home, so you got to give 110%.
I'm saying Rene Bork. How has he become what he's become? not how did I? How did you and I do an hour podcast? Though I love the cliches.
I don't know. I don't know. Either there might be some truth into what you said last week and that or a couple days ago, and that, you know, he's been playing with a bit of a governor. He's been, you know, taking it easy because he doesn't want to get another conky, but come playoffs, maybe you take the foot off the brake a little bit. As much as we shit on him, like, I think part of it's just that he's a relatively talented player who was bound to find the back of the net eventually, just the sheer mathematics of it.
Yeah, but he's been one of the best forwards.
Yeah,
it's not just really lucky. Good. I mean, he's been a completely different player than we saw from him any other time. I threw out the theory that he acquired the same weaponry as the aliens in Space Jam.
There's that.
He's stolen that from somebody. That seems plausible. Almost as likely as what is actually happening. 3 goals. I mean, he's gonna pass his regular season totals by round 2.
Yeah, I mean, he's taken a swig of whatever Dustin Penner chugs back before the playoffs. He's a completely different player. He's a completely new player.
It's a bit of the doghouse crew. Got to give them credit. Lars Eller, PK Subban, Rene Bork. Getting it done. They've all been getting it done. No complaints. It's 3-0. Hasn't happened since 93, folks. Nothing to worry about yet. We'll see you next time.